Track 15. We are nearing the end of the magazine, so it's time for the past lives section about the people who made our county great. Cutty Sark's most successful skipper. Chris Armstrong tells the story of the Norfolk farmer's son who captained the Cutty Sark to fame and fortune.
Richard Woodgett was born in 1845 at Burnham Norton, less than 3 miles from the birthplace of Horatio Nelson. Though he came from a farming family, he went to sea as an indentured apprentice at 15, initially on a small coastal vessel of a type known as a billy boy. These small vessels were little more than barges, rounded at both bow and stern to create the largest possible space for cargo. They plied their trade down the east coast from Northumberland to London. The following year, he moved on to a small schooner, which was also engaged in coastal work, and eventually to a brig, the British Ensign, which sailed internationally. His indenture completed, he sailed as naval seaman while studying for his mate's certificate. On one long voyage, he was signed on as ship's cook, but no record seems to exist to attest to his culinary skills. He acquired his mate's certificate in 1868, qualifying him to serve as number two to the master, and in 1871 he won his master's certificate. This was also the year he married Maria Smith, with whom he had 4 children. 3 of them were to sail under their father on the Cutty Sark, each of them duly qualifying as a master mariner. Having a master's certificate was not enough to guarantee him a command. In fact, it was to be another 10 years before he got his opportunity, most of the interim spent as a mate. But finally, in 1881, a shipowner, John Willis, offered Woodgett command of his ship, the Coldstream. The role of master was a demanding one. On many occasions, a ship would sail with a cargo for a faraway port, only to discover there was no immediate prospect of a fresh cargo to bring home or profitably to take elsewhere. In those days, it was a key part of the master's role to locate a new cargo, negotiate the price, and find the most profitable route home, picking up new cargo at intermediate ports if necessary. And that was in addition to navigating, sailing the ship home, training the apprentices, and maintaining order among the crew, quite difficult when the ship might be idling in a foreign port for weeks while the master tried to find another cargo. In short, the role demanded navigational skills, great seamanship, diplomacy, people skills, salesmanship, negotiating skills, and judgment. It's not surprising that many masters fell short of the expectations of their owners. Woodgett, though, wasn't one of them. From the start, he produced good profits from his trading on the Coldstream, and Willis recognised his potential. In 1869, the launch had taken place of the Cutty Sark, built in Dumbarton for Willis. He was a tough negotiator himself. The package of compensation clauses he built in and the price he negotiated created financial problems for the builders, but Willis was very pleased with the final product. The ship had been commissioned specifically for the China tea trade, where speed was key to profitability, as the earliest arrivals produced the highest prices and profits. But if Willis was a tough negotiator, his forward planning was less shrewd. Indeed, his crystal ball must have been pretty clouded. 1869 didn't just see the launch of the Cutty Sark, it also saw the opening of the Suez Canal. Combined with the increasing reliability and speed of steamships, the opening of the canal spelt the beginning of the end for the tea clippers. The prevailing winds did not favour their entry to the canal, and the extra distance they had to sail by not using it put them at a significant disadvantage. Despite some stunningly quick voyages in the early years of the Cutty Sark, it was soon obvious that she could not compete. Her tea-clipper days ended in Shanghai, when, after weeks spent trying to find a cargo, her master died and was replaced by James Wallace, who had been mate. The ship moved to a general trading role under several masters, some of whom were not entirely satisfactory. Wallace certainly wasn't. On Wallace's first and only voyage in command, Sidney Smith, the mate he had chosen, murdered one of the crew who'd been goading him. The mate was originally locked away on board, but at the next port, Wallace contrived to help him escape. The crew were not amused, and when back at sea, they went on strike. The ship became becalmed and was at risk of capture by pirates or of being rescued by self-seeking salvage operators. Eventually, Wallace, having reputedly filled his pockets with stones to weigh him down, jumped overboard and was never seen again. Upon which the wind picked up and the crew returned to work, sailing back to Anyar, the Indonesian port they had just left, where a new master, Captain Bruce, joined the ship. If the crew thought that no one could be worse than Wallace, they soon learnt otherwise. Not only was Bruce a poor seaman, he was an habitual drunkard, and worse, in his attempts to economise to increase profits, he understocked crew rations, leaving them all half-starved. His reign was short, too. He was succeeded by a Captain Moore, who was a far more reliable figure and was in command when Willis switched the ship from trading general cargo to a regular run carrying wool from Australia back to London. Meantime, Richard Wudgett had been busy commanding the Coldstream and making good profits for Willis, and when Moore moved on in 1885, it coincided with Wudgett's return from a spectacularly profitable four-year voyage. Willis promptly rewarded him with the captaincy of the Cutty Sark, a choice he was never to regret. Moore had done much to improve the condition of the ship, which had deteriorated badly during the short terms of her previous two masters, and had successfully completed the first Australian wool run voyage, and Willis appointed him master of his favourite ship, the Tweed. But it was under Wudgett that the Cutty Sark was to have her finest hours. Wudgett was a first-class seaman and an able and popular manager of his crew. His financial acumen was already recognised by Willis, and he was both liked and respected by his crew, normally about 25 strong, and of various nationalities. Wudgett was a man of courage and experience. His time as an able seaman meant that he thoroughly understood the work of the crew and had himself proved able to do anything that he asked of them. He was prepared to push the ship hard, and he chose much more southerly routes from Australia than was generally the case in order to pick up the trade winds. This was not without risk, and the ship sometimes found herself sailing through icebergs, but the crew reposed great confidence in their master, and he repaid that confidence by achieving extraordinarily fast passages. A devout and committed Christian, a total abstainer and a non-smoker, he was perhaps the antithesis of the general perception of a hard-driving captain. He held prayer meetings on deck and kept a stock of religious tracts and temperance leaflets handy, which he would pass out, even, according to one account, hurling them towards the other ships that he passed. But if his crew respected his seamanship, they also certainly liked the manner in which he managed them. One of his favourite habits, when the ship was between cargoes, was to exercise by riding a bicycle along the lower decks, which would normally hold cargo. And if there wasn't room to cycle, he would roller skate instead. There were generally a number of apprentices in the crew, and he was happy to teach them how to ride, as well as the rudiments of their career. Three of his sons served at least part of their apprenticeship on the Cutty Sark, one of them progressing to be mate. He was clearly committed to encouraging them. Throughout the 10 years he was master, the family home remained in Norfolk, in Downham Market. He took the Cutty's Ark on 10 voyages to Australia on the Wool Run during that period, achieving some extraordinary times. On his first voyage sailing out to Sydney, he took just 77 days, and he clipped 4 days off that on the return journey. As it had been with tea, speed was of the essence in the wool trade, as the wool needed to be available in England for the January wool sales. Eventually, the increasingly reliable performance of steamers rendered sailing ships redundant on this route too, but not before Wodgett had been able to enjoy the discomfiture of those on the P&O steamer Britannia, travelling overnight at about 15 knots, when they were astonished to be overtaken by the Cutty's Ark doing 17. "She sailed," said her proud master, "like a witch." For company on board, Wodgett took 2 monkeys as pets and some collie dogs, from whom he bred a number who went on to win prizes in Australian dog shows. The collies were not universally popular with the crew, though. Some letters home from an apprentice were discovered a few years ago which described the collies as vicious. His other principal hobby was photography, and at the Royal Museums, Greenwich, there are a number of examples of his work illustrating daily life on board, the passage between icebergs, and general views of the ship both in harbour and under sail. For the latter, Wodgett launched 2 boats and suspended a plank between them to hold the camera for the best shot. His time in the ship came to an end when John Willis decided to dispose of her to a Portuguese trading company, and although he took over as master of another of Willis's ships, he made only 1 voyage before retiring to end his days in Norfolk, dying in 1928. Before his death, he saw the Cutty's Ark back in British hands, bought from its Portuguese owners as an act of charity by Captain Dowman, a retired master from Falmouth, who put her to use as a training school. After his death, his widow, a member of the Courtauld family, sold the ship for 10 shillings, or 50p, to the Thames Nautical Training College, and donated a further £5,000 for her maintenance. On one occasion, in 1924, Cutty's Ark had been taken from Falmouth to act as a committee ship for a regatta at Foy. Although she was towed there by tug, she was, by Captain Dowman's invitation, under the command of Richard Wodgett, by that time 78 years old. What memories that trip must have brought back, and what a fine gesture on Dowman's part.